Press play.
Curtain up and now we're in.
It's time to take spin.
The shade and tea to spill.
Ooh, drama.
Ooh, that's a tweet. Did they book?
Who got nom?
They optional.
Oh, I'm not well.
What star will we talk to today? Oh, that's a gag, honey.
Say no more. Drama.
Drama.
Welcome to Drama, a podcast that covers theater,
pop culture,
love,
and life.
I'm Connor McDowell.
And I am Dylan McDowell. It's the last podcast of the year, Connor.
We made it through another one. I can't believe it. There were a few moments this fall that I thought we weren't gonna. But hey,
no, it was right around the 2 year mark where I was like, should we take a break? But yeah. No. We have released an episode every single week for the last 2 years and month.
I know. That's pretty fun. It's all because of you.
And we're going out on a high note here at the end of 2021.
The highest note that I don't even want to talk to you for that long right now.
Oh, I think I hear a little preview.
Oh my God. Dylan, I don't even have anything to say to you, really.
I say we jump right in.
Do you want to?
I think so.
The only thing I wanted to say was I saw West Side Story last night.
Yes,
new one,
I did,
new one,
I did too, but we weren't together, which is odd.
Oh, that is kind of weird, but it was everything.
Yeah.
I loved epic. It.
I'm going to go ahead and say that it was my favorite movie of the year.
Ooh.
I know. And it's been a rich year for film.
I'm with you. I'm pretty sure I'm with you. At the time of release, at the time of recording, I'm with you.
At the time of recording. Okay, so yeah. As of December 10th, this is going to come out later, but...
I mean, I also watched the original the other day and I was like, this is such it's an airtight film. And they added on to it in a way mm-hmm. It made it even better. I don't know if our guests saw it yet, but maybe we'll get into it.
I will say we recorded a crossover episode with our friends over at Oscar Wilde podcast that is available now. And people should listen to our thoughts on the movie there.
We were wild for it.
I know, we were absolutely wild for it. But I think we should bring in our wild guest today because-
Oh my God.
He's an untamed stallion.
He is so wild.
That's the energy he's been bringing today, and I love it.
I am obsessed. So, everybody, our guest today is a bona fide superstar of stage and screen, Tony nominated for Best Performance by an Actor in a featured role in a musical in The Mystery of Edwin Drood. You'll know his signature powerhouse vocals and acting chops from his appearances on Broadway in Kiss Me, Kate, opposite Kelly O'Hara, Something Rotten, Nice Work If You Can Get It, The Story of My Life, Billy Elliot, High Fidelity, Lennon, The Full Monty, Aida, Rent, and Miss Saigon, which he also toured the nation with. And that's just Broadway. He starred as Luke Wheeler for many, many years on ABC's Nashville, as the dashing Michael Swift on Smash, Stranger Things, Sharp Objects, American Crime Story, Johnny Versace, Quantico, The Good Wife, The Deuce, Madam Secretary, Rescue Me, Royal Pains, Time After Time, Dope Sick, and so much more. Oh my God. I think he's as tired as I am reading this, but oh my God, he's performed all over the world and has sung with the renowned New York Pops at Carnegie Hall, the Cincinnati Pops, and the Colorado Symphony. He also has some Ohio roots, which of course we're going to discuss. We're ending the year on the highest of notes with this gag of a guest. Please welcome to Drama, Will Chase.
Hey guys, I thought you were gonna say David Alvarez because you were starting with West Side Story. It's like, is David Alvarez here?
Oh yes, your friend, right?
Well, I don't know if we're friends. He was just a child when I knew him. But wait, let's go back to that. I have not seen it. It's out. Oh, I was gonna say, how'd you guys see it? And then I'm like, oh, I don't go out in the world. Is it everything? Is it everything?
It's everything.
There's one thing I'd change, but I can live with it. And that's the casting of Ansel Elgort as Tony. I really, he did an okay job, but I feel like they didn't need him. They could have really cast anyone because most of the other cast was unknown. So I'm kind of confused.
But
about
did he
that
do
choice.
Something that you didn't enjoy? I've always enjoyed him. And I know he's usually he keeps the thing down until he lets it out, which I think is fine for Tony. Mm-hmm. Did he do something in particular that you didn't enjoy?
You know, it's not that he did something I didn't enjoy. It's that he didn't really pop off the screen in the way that I wanted him to.
Gotcha. Well, when you've got Ariana DeBose, when you've got David Alvarez, when you've got Rachel Zegler, I've not even seen it yet, and the reviews are stupid. Like, you don't get these reviews ever in your life, and then you get them. But anyway, David Alvarez is not a friend. I mean, he'd know who I am. Hi, David, if you're watching or listening on your way to the Oscars, on your Oscar nomination. He's a gifted human, and I hear he's just perfect.
Perfect. He delivered.
And they flesh out Bernardo. They Tony Kushner's book is phenomenal.
Oh, and hello,
Mike Feist.
Oh, Mike Feist.
He's otherworldly. That guy.
He was my standout performance.
He was great in Dear Evan Hansen. I did a pilot that I got fired from years ago. That I told you we'd talk about anything. Yeah. A thing called Panic on Amazon. Oh. I had a couple scenes with him. He's just. The way I talk about Christian Borle is Christian is always mischievous. I don't care if he's doing a serious scene. I don't care if it's a funny scene. I don't care if we're having dinner and it's not a scene at all. It's in real life. There's always a little bit of mischief. Mike, and I barely know him. There's always some undercurrent of some kind of, I don't want to say psychosis,
but there's some kind of what he does. Yeah.
And he's really great. Like, it's vulnerable and real, but anyway, this isn't a podcast about him.
Well, listen, but in the film, Mike has this, like you said, vulnerability. There's this twinkle in his eyes. You're going to love it.
Yeah, but a twinkle like, I want to kill all Puerto Ricans.
It goes back and forth, and this movie certainly doesn't shy away from the...
Which I love. Yes, that's all I've heard.
It's great. I really... Mm. It makes you feel conflicted almost the whole time, which...
Great. Which so little... this might be the second half of this podcast, but which for me, so little does anymore. So little... So everything is anodyne and kind of... Okay, we've made everything not mean anything by trying to make it mean everything. And something like that piece is what, which is why the first movie still works and why it sounds like this movie is brilliant, because we still put our sensibility on it, but it worked then. It was a story about that then. And, you know, rest in peace, Mr. Sondheim. I mean, those that will never, ever be dated. Anything he did will never be dated, but that will never be dated. Those lyrics will never, if they do another movie in 40 years, I don't know why they would, but that seems to be what we do. Who'll direct it? Billie Eilish will direct in 40 years West Side Story, but it'll still hold up is my point. Still hold up.
Well, where did you pull Billie Eilish?
Are you a Billie fan? Dinner?
Well,
why?
Well, a fan peripherally, because Ingrid's a fan, and then my oldest daughter, Daisy, they're a fan. And so I think they're still a fan. I mean, I think they're still listening to them. We just totally dig what she does. We're on a flight recently back from LA, and it's very masked up and very, you know, Ingrid looks like a Jawa. Do you know a Jawa from Star Wars? You know,
absolutely.
She's got the hood on
from Star Wars.
Not that I'm trying to be seen, but I like, you know, a mask, and there's this woman behind her just full out sweats. You could barely see her a couple times. And then we're like, oh, we're getting off the plane. And that whole group, there was a big strong man beside her and then another strong man behind her. And we got off the plane and they're waiting by where you pick up your little bag if you've dropped it, you know, at the tunnel there. Oh, they're getting the car that's literally waiting at the bottom of those stairs. And oh, it's Billy. And Ingrid later on Instagram is like, oh, you were behind me the whole time. And Billy was like, that was you, Ingrid Michaels? And I was totally like, yeah, I live with her.
Oh my God. Wait, I feel like we're diving in, but are you in love with Ingrid Michaelson?
Not at all.
I was going to say, because I'm gay, but I am too.
Just a stop on the way, people. A stop on the way. No, of course. I am so in love with Ingrid Michaelson. Best human I know. Best friend. Knows all my crap and likes me in spite of that. No, she's the best. She's the coolest. I'm not joking. So if you could see us, and they'll show pictures later, but this is our studio at our home in Brooklyn. I'm not joking when she will, you know, I'll go away to learn lines, but when I come back, it's just, I've learned some lines. She'll go away. I'm going to go, I got to write. So I just got this idea. She'll come back with a demo. I'm not joking. And she'll, you want to listen? You know, half hour later, and I'm like, this is so good. So good. Like, all of Notebook, all of the Notebook stuff. I've heard all of it for the last 4 years, and she'll come and go, I've got a new song for young Noah, and it's like,
oh my god.
I spend most of my days crying when she does it. But anyway, she's the best. She's awesome. She's a Christmas elf. She's the best person in the world.
You lay down any demos for adult Noah?
No, because I'm, you know what? I'm that in between. I would be middle-aged Noah.
Okay.
There's young Noah, there's middle Noah, and old Noah. And I've not quite old enough for old. You know, I'm not quite 70s. I'm not in my 30s, and I'm certainly not in my teens. So
okay.
You still look so young, Will. It's wild.
51. 51, damn it.
Oh my god.
That's amazing.
I know. And see, I want John, you know, John Slattery,
yeah.
The
actor. Loved him from Mad Men.
Oh yeah.
I want that color hair, cuz I want people to know, cuz I think people now, which my 20s, people are like, is he 14 or 30, right? When I was in, right? So then when I was in my 30s, I'm like, "Oh, they're like, "Oh, he's in his 30s." And when I was 40, "Oh, he's mid 30s. He's in his 40s." Now that I'm 50, it's like, "Is he 35 or 52 with white hair?" I would be what the world thinks of 52. Yes. For television. Damn.
Maybe.
It.
I will say, when I saw you in Rent in the summer of 2009 and you had your bleached hair, I certainly wasn't sure what age you were.
You're like, you can't be a day over 28. No, I'm kidding. Right?
Well, Roger's what, like 20? I forget.
Okay.
Because isn't, sure. Isn't no, he's, Mimi 19, but she's old for her age?
Yeah, they're supposed to be 20, 21. Yeah, and listen, on stage, far away, Niederlander, lights, bleached hair. You know, we're going to film it. Do you have a soft filter for the lens that you can, the Goldie, not too close.
The Goldie Hawn filter.
Yeah. The Goldie Hawn, which I was going to say, I know Oliver Hudson very well. And,
oh, yeah.
And finally got to meet Goldie and Kurt recently. So that was a highlight.
Really?
Live through me, people. Live through me.
I truly have. Just after I read your bio.
The coolest normal people other than... they're Goldie Kurt Hudson. Do you know what I mean? Oh, they're normal people, yeah. Other than it's them.
Absolutely. Yeah. Legends.
Right, sure. Wait, so you have kids, and
I have a 22-year-old Daisy, yes. And almost 23, and then Gracie is 20.
Okay. Wow. So, you know, I was going to say, you know, you are a father, and I almost put this in the bio, but to many, you're a daddy.
You are. You're a daddy.
Oh, I see. I see what you've done.
Yeah.
Little play on words. Yes. Thank you.
Because
of the tats. Because of the tats.
Wait, I love the...
couple ex-wives, couple of girlfriends, some kids.
Get out of here. Yeah. You have is Betty the ex-wife, or is it because of the Taylor Swift song Betty?
No, Betty's my mama.
Betty's your mama.
Betty's my mama.
That's so nice.
So, interesting story about Betty. So, that tattoo, Ingrid One concert, it's all going to be a... this might as well be called Ingrid Michaelson.
Oh,
we can,
yeah,
swear on here.
No,
right?
One will be mad, yes, about that, Will.
Ingrid fucking Michaelson. her mom's name was Betty, and she got a tattoo. This is well before we met. She got a tattoo because she has tats, and one of her favorite tattoo artists happened to be at her show. I think it might have been San Francisco or San Diego. Anyway, so before the show, and her mom had passed, her mother Betty had passed, Elizabeth, I think the previous summer, and he was like, you know what? I'm getting a fucking tattoo before the show. I mean, how fucking rock and roll is that, right? So the guy comes back and he puts Betty in this script, this exact script, on her wrist. We meet, we fall in love. My mom's name is Betty. Then years later, we were dating because Ingrid will not allow me to get any tattoos of her because I do, in fact, have some ex-wives and ex-girlfriends on here. And Ingrid's like, no, you're going to jinx it. So I had the a picture of the script for her mom. And then I got this for my mom, who's still alive and with us. But now Ingrid and I both have the same script, Betty. And that's my mom. And my mom's, you know, reaction, if you ask her, is like, oh, I don't know, Will, just those tattoos. But you know,
she loves
that. Is
it
so special?
Oh, my God.
Come on. Yeah, it doesn't say mom. It's
right.
Betty.
Now, is your name really Will Chase? Because it sounds like you were born to be a star.
It sounds like a soap opera name, doesn't it?
Or a porn star.
Yeah, well, that, yeah.
So I've been a porn star, and
it is Will Chase. We missed that on the credits that we read.
Yeah. Well, those kind of things you don't put out there, okay, but okay. Post-pandemic. my full name is Frank William Chase. My grandfather's name was Frank. His real name was Francis William Chase. And my parents, after two boys, they're like, well, we should name one of them after the grandfather. And but they never had any intention of calling me Frank. So it was Will from the get-go, Will Chase. So I'm still frank on some things that I don't want, like, you know, some credit card statement. Sure, so if I know sure. I get a call for Frank Chase, like, you don't know me. Yeah. Will Chase, oddly, this is another great story. This is going to last for me all of 10 minutes, but you're like, we have 3 hours. We have to edit. So cut to, I'm, you know, a pretty well-known person. I've just done Nashville on ABC for 3 years. Do you know the actor Scott Foley?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, from Scandal.
Yeah, yeah, he's wonderful. So a couple of years ago, maybe 3 or 4 now, this is well after Nashville and stuff, but I'm me. I mean, I'm, you know, Will Chase, other than people going, Will Smith, I mean, Will Chase, because we so we resemble each other.
Oh, yeah.
Right. They put out this TV show called Whiskey Cavalier. Mm-hmm. Maybe you didn't see it.
No one really did.
Well, what was his character's name in the show? Will Chase.
No way.
So when it came out, when Deadline put out like ABC's doing a put pilot called Whiskey Cavalier, and it's about Will Chase, and Whiskey Cavalier was his call letter. So WC, Whiskey Cavalier, Will Chase, right? And I call my people, and it's a weird moment to be in going, guys, I know I'm not famous like Brad Pitt, but they couldn't think of it. Couldn't be Walt Chisholm or Willie, or you know what I mean? I thought, yeah, this is an odd thing. Surely they'll change it. They never changed it, and it was whatever. Years later, it was only 2 years. Do you know the actor Josh Molina?
Of course, also from Scandal.
Yes, also from Scandal.
Scandal, and I'm a West Wing fanat, yeah. So I've known Josh on the TV for a long time, and then Josh and I became friends on Twitter years ago. Anyway, he's a big prankster. I knew he was a prankster on West Wing. He is a prankster on Scandal. So we struck up a friendship. Anyway, cut to, I told him, just by happenstance, one day he actually asked me, what's the deal with Scott's show? Like Scott's new show where they named you. I said, well, I told my people about it, and they're like, you know, what are you going to do? You know, blah, 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 blah. I said, what I should have done, and I was joking, what I should have done is told him I was going to get legal on it. He goes, oh, well, we're in DC right now shooting some exteriors for the end of Scandal. He said, text him that you're getting legal on it. I said, I can't, I'm not that person. Like, I'm the guy who makes a joke on stage and then ends up laughing more than anybody else. Like, there's a banana peel, right? So he talked me into it. I sent Scott Foley a text on set for Scandal going, Scott, Will Chase, you know, I've been a series regular on Nashville, blah, blah, blah. And I don't want this to go to legal, but, you know, it's weird that you guys use my name. I feel like I'm going to have to bring my lawyer into it. So if you don't, you know, take care of it, I'm going to do a cease and desist. And I did this whole legalese thing.
That is hilarious.
Josh gave me the name of his producer, Bill Lawrence. I was like, you know, I'm going to have Warner Brothers reach out. Josh took a picture of Scott reading it, and Scott's he's like white going, oh my fuck, like, oh my god, I'm gonna, you know. And then I told Josh, I can only do this for like a half hour, I can't do this all day. He goes, oh, come on, you gotta do this for a whole day. I texted him back going, just kidding.
Oh man. And Josh is egging you on, of course, as the on-set prankster.
Of course he did. So anyway, that's my little Will Chase story. We're almost done. No, okay.
Well, listen, Will, I feel like we've touched on a few of your credits, and I want to get into all of it. But before we do, I'd love to ask you a question we ask all of our guests about that moment you realized you were passionate about the arts in some way. We call it the Ring of Keys moment, inspired by Fun Home's own moment of recognition. Do you feel like you had that moment where you were like, oh my God?
Oh, is this, I thought the song would come in for a moment.
Well, our producer will put it in during editing.
Okay, yeah. So I'll pause.
I'm the producer. Beth Malone, actually, when we had Beth Malone on, she gave the whole intro. Like, she actually did the dialogue.
Well, duh.
Yeah. And I was like, we should take this and supercut it into every episode.
You should. So we'll leave space for that now. Hold on. Great. And then if you mention something in a minute that's something I sang, then I'll give you, you know, whatever that is. You mean getting it. So I thought about this, and you, even when you emailed me, you mean got into the arts, not even to acting, because I grew up with music as a part of my childhood. My dad's a minister, music minister, and my brothers all played instruments and sang. So I oddly knew music. I guess I'm saying I don't know that there was a moment for that. I just was a good drummer. I was a good singer. And I knew early on, and I love Frankfort, Kentucky. So the four people that are listening from Frankfort, Kentucky, I love you. However, I wanted to get out of Frankfort, Kentucky. And I knew that percussion music, and I was studying to be a conductor, was going to do that. Mm. I knew that probably when I was in eighth grade. I'm going to be the best percussionist and conductor I can be and get out, not go to UK, love University of Kentucky, not go to U of L, love the University of Louisville, not go to any Kentucky school because I needed to be away. Mm-hmm. And so I went to Oberlin. Couldn't be a further cry from growing up Southern Baptist minister's kid. I had a ponytail and an earring and Birkenstocks.
Talk about liberal arts. I mean,
talk about liberal with a capital L.
That's actually where Allison in Fun Home goes to college.
Oh, it is. Totally. It is.
This is weird.
So let's cut all that and just say, when I went to Oberlin, see? No. Then when I went to Oberlin, that's where the acting, I'd done some acting in college and stuff, and a couple of buddies were heavy into Sondheim at the time. This is 92. So like Assassins had just done like Playwrights Horizons, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? That's where we are.
In the year world. Before we were born.
Take care and good night, everybody. I'm walking away from
the podcast. You're like, that's where we were in the world. And we're like, uh-huh.
Well, you don't look a day over 49. But a buddy of mine was directing Sweeney Todd as a student project and said, hey, I know you sing. I know you grew up in the church singing. You should audition for Anthony. I was like, all right. And I was like, all right, stop worrying where you're good. No, but I did. And I was like, I was obsessed with Sunday. And you're talking about a percussionist, a long-haired percussionist who's studying to be a conductor. But I was obsessed with Sunday in the Park with George, obsessed with everything about it and the video and everything.
Oh, yeah.
And I sang Move On. You know, it's one of those when you're in college, you're like, and you're not an actor. And he goes, it's yours. I didn't have to wait for the cast list. You know, you dream about those. You see those in movies where it happens in real life. That never happens in real life. But he's like, it's yours. I'm like, oh, okay. You know, and then enough people were like, you should really think about doing this, you know? And again, I didn't sign up for that. I didn't want to do the business part of it and all that. So enough people were like, you should think about doing this. And so then I poured myself into acting. So that's probably the moment for the acting. Getting into art and the arts, that was just kind of, we were steeped in. And it wasn't like you're going to be an artist or anything like that, but it just was around us and excellence in art and excellence in like going to Oberlin. I mean, my parents couldn't afford Oberlin. When I think about it now, I'm sending Gracie to my youngest to NYU. Don't send your kids to NYU. It's really
That's
expensive.
What I've heard. No. I've heard that, yeah.
but I'm just saying, my parents couldn't afford Oberlin and they did. I mean, they did. They made sure they did. And Dad, you know, was like, well, no, I want you to go to the place where you will be around the most excellent people you can be, because I know you're excellent at what you do and you want to be excellent at what you do. And people ask me all the time, do you regret? No, not at all. I wouldn't. If I got into Eastman or Juilliard as a percussionist, I'd probably be a percussionist or a conductor. Mm. And I'm not one of those, oh, there's a reason. I'm not one of those people. I'm not. However, I'm so glad I went to Oberlin and they need people outside of the theater department to act. And so I was very fortunate. And that I guess Sweeney Todd, James Sugg, if you're listening, James Sugg, great. If you're listening, you know, you're the reason I'm doing this. And we had a little moment via text, you know, when Stephen died. Mm. And even Ingrid and I, it was weird because we were talking about West Side. I never got to work with Bernstein.
Okay.
Obviously, a lot of people didn't because he died when I was in college. But, and oddly, I never, ever got to work with Stephen. I met him one time ever. And so when he passed, I thought, weeping. Ingrid came in the office and goes, and she likes to prepare me for anything. We have to get dog food. We have to, you know what I mean? So then she came in this night. I was in here doing some editing and she goes, I'm going to tell you something that's going to upset you. It's something very important to you. And I thought, oh God. But I know she's also not saying it's, you know, it's like Tessa, our dog, or your father. Mm-hmm. She said, Stephen Sondheim passed away. And I was like, and immediately was like, I didn't know what to do. And we went out to the couch and, you know, she's writing The Notebook. So she's steeped into this world of writing right now and legacy. And her parents were both passed. Her dad was a composer. So it was like, it was weird. It was weirder than any other, because I didn't know him. I was so... But weeping for days still, for days going, I don't know how to process this. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know how to, because like, I have friends that are very good friends with, were good friends with him. So I'm sure Alex Gimignani's a friend, Paul Gimignani. Like, you can't imagine the what they're going through. And then my friends like Stephen Pasquale and those people who work with him, you can imagine what they're going through. And I'm sitting here feeling oddly, I don't know if you had the same experience, because touched all of us that love theater in a way that's very, very weird. And Ingrid sat down and wrote a song the other day, like she does. And it was like, oh, finally. She sent it to me, you know, like I go to sleep at 10, she's up till 2, and I get up in the morning, she says, listen to this. And I listen to this song, I was like, weeping on the couch. Because then I start going, it's about Sondheim, it's about you later when you die. It's about, you know, it's about, but it's about everything. And finally, I was able to literally, like, ugly cry on the couch, because I didn't feel like I had. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Oh, absolutely.
Like, I didn't feel like I had yet. Like, we all know him, but I don't know him. It's not like I knew he wasn't a friend. So anyway, that was a really long way around. Doing Sondheim in college was my, this is my moment. This is what I should be doing. All roads lead to being that excellent in acting, in musical theater. If I can do it as well as the Sondheim actors that I looked up to, Bob Westenberg, Mandy Patinkin, Barbara Cook, all those people that to me are Sondheim actors, whatever that means. If I can do it as well as them, then that's what I'll strive for as far as singing goes, you know.
Does Sunday remain your favorite Sondheim?
Sweeney probably does, just because I did it and that's the one. But Sunday, there's something other. Who writes that?
I know.
Who writes a show about a painting and then Lapine comes in and makes that wonderful, and all those actors made that, and Mandy and Bernadette, it was when they were at their, and they're both amazing still, but when they were, you know, I look at them when I was in college going, oh God, when I'm that age, and you're like, they were 12, you know what I mean? They were 30.
Right.
You're like, oh, well, I'm past that age. Anybody want to, you know, but Sunday is still one of those artistic ones that you're like, yes, please. If anybody's doing that anywhere, I'll go do it. Yeah. Scranton, I'm there.
I'm surprised we never saw you in that Barrow Street Sweeney.
Oh, I know.
Right?
You know, I was doing some television. Good segue. I was trying to make some money.
You were doing television. Wait, I'm so glad that you auditioned for Sweeney. I'm so glad you did that too. I can't imagine you being a drummer that we never, you know, you brought so much to life on screen and on stage for us. And I can't imagine not, like, we saw you as Roger in Rent during that last summer. And it lives on forever in the filmed version. And like,
I know, so grateful to get to do that whole thing too. Again, my career never went, still doesn't, which is great. But in the last decade, I've been able to go, oh, okay. I don't know how it's going to play itself out. We all have ideas. We, even at that age, you know, us guys starting out, it was very Cameron Mackintosh heavy, mm-hmm. Saigon, Les Mis, Phantom heavy. It was meaning you're going to fit in there at some point. But then what? And I've always been a then what guy. And Rent came out of, you know, after doing the tour of Miss Saigon, Rent came out of absolutely nowhere. You want me to cover? Okay, my ego, I guess I'll be able to do that. You want me to understudy? Okay. I'm the guy in the wings going, I'm better. You know, I was that guy. I didn't say that out loud, but
Were you honest living? Honest living, honest living. Was that you?
I was honest living. So that's 5 miso soup, 4 seaweed salad, 3 soy burger, dinner, 2 tofu dog platter, and 1 pasta with meatless pasta. Come on. I haven't done that.
It's in you.
I was Stephen Others, and then I was Mark Roger cover that first time around. So I did a lot of Marks. My first time on is Mark. Norbert Butts is Roger. And I'm not joking. You learn stuff quick when you were an understudy in Rent and you were Mark Roger cover. You didn't know your ass from, you're like, oh, I'm doing both. How do you dog? Oh, that's not right. So my first time on is Mark, the power blows 2, 3, and I'm doing it. I'm like, okay, I'm in it. I'm just concentrate. Will we get to the end of, we're not gonna pay. I have to act that. We're not gonna pay. And then they do last year's rent. Right. Uh-huh. Some little thing that I never gotten taught. Never got taught that. I'm going to repeat that. Never got taught. So Norbert, we get to that part in the show, the actual show, the night, he starts doing that. And me, the giving actor that I am, I'm looking at him like, what's he doing? That's interesting. And so I make fun of him. I do this. He starts doing that and I do like that. And he pushes me over.
Get out of here.
He pushed me. Norbert, if you're listening, which he's not. Norbert, he pushed me over, and I, you know, was laughing because I thought, oh, that's what a friend would do. We got off stage. He's like, what are you doing?
But for those who couldn't see, Will was doing a bit of a jig in that moment.
I was doing a little bit of a jig.
Yeah.
He was doing just your sensible great, not even grapevine, your sensible cross step up to the front of the stage. And I was doing a little jig to make fun of him.
Yeah.
He pushed me over.
Wow. So was Sherry Renee Scott also in Rent at this time?
Sherry Renee, when I did it, no.
Okay.
Sherry Renee had left. I came in after, so Norbert would have been Roger.
Yeah.
I came in, the first group had just left.
Okay.
So it was like Jim Pulis.
Oh, wow.
And Norbert Butts, and Gwen was now playing Joanne. And,
I forgot that happened.
It was, yeah, you know what I mean? It was like, oh, everybody goes up one. And how Norbert Butts was ever in the ensemble of anything is beyond me, because he's just gifted human. It was awesome. I remember, my Broadway debut was Rent, Squeegee Man, and I still remember it like it was yesterday, January 30th, 1998.
Wow.
You don't rehearse with mics or anything like that. When you're a cover or going in the ensemble, you don't rehearse with a band and stuff like that. So here comes Jim Pulis. He does the whole opening monologue, blah, blah, blah. The power blows. 2, 3, blah. It's going to do it now. The hair on the back of my neck stood up. I was like, oh my God, I'm on Broadway, uh-huh. And the band's right there, and it's loud as fuck, and I can't, like, it was like, I was like in it. By the end of it, I couldn't sing a note. Like the end of the opening number, I was like, oh my God, guys, that was amazing. I'm going to be the best squeegee, because it was unreal. Lori, my ex-wife, we're very close. She has video footage. I don't know that I'll be able to find. I don't know. She cut out, back in the day, cut out a coach bag.
That's how you do it.
Put a Hi8 video camera in the standing room at the Niederlander. You used to be able to stand in those little windows in the back.
Oh.
And she's like, and she's got me doing, will I lose my dick? The first time, like on video. And it's like shaky. And like,
oh, yeah.
It's amazing. 28-year-old Will with some big old bell bottoms.
If you can unearth that. In honor of your, by January 30th, try and find that.
Oh,
that's gold. I know you're off social media, but you know.
Totes off social media.
That is so amazing.
I know. I was trying to find you. I was like, what's going on here?
Hey, if you find the guy on Instagram, by the way, who says he's Will Chase and has 3 followers, it's not me.
Okay. I found a Will Chase and I was like.
And I think it even has a picture of me and Ingrid like, oh yeah, just hanging out from 5 years ago, that picture.
What the hell? Weird shit.
I feel like you did 100 Broadway shows in the two.
Well, a couple of them I did in 2 nights.
Right.
Well,
I think it was 5 shows, right?
I did a couple of those shows in 2 nights. What's that?
It was 5 shows, right? So was that 3 days or 4?
Story of My Life.
Yeah.
Story of My Life was Thursday night, Friday night, 2 Saturday, 1 Sunday.
Well,
High Fidelity was 10 shows, maybe 10 shows after we previewed. I don't need to bitch about Story of My Life anymore. It was horrible. Thank God I'd already been through High Fidelity. Mm-hmm. Story of My Life, I still don't understand. It's like, we did it out of town. It was fine. We did it in New York. You knew this wasn't going to run for 6 months. Listen to me, I'm bitching. You knew this wasn't going to run for 6. But you knew this wasn't going to run for 6 months. This will run for 3 months. It's a chamber piece. It is what it is. Meaning a two-hander with Malcolm Goetz, we're not going to like change Broadway. Do you know what I mean? So it's like, what did you think was going to happen? We open on Thursday. We come early Friday to get let go. Like, what did you think was going to happen Thursday night? Like, ticket sales are going to go through the roof for a two-hander at the booth? No. So that's when I go, it shouldn't have happened then. You're right. It should never happen in this day and age.
Yeah.
But it shouldn't have happened then. It was very bizarre. But anyway, I've been on both ends of those, which has been, you know, again, in hindsight, being 51, it's like, oh, I had some flops, and I've been part of some amazing theater-changing things, like Billy Elliot, like Rent, like, you know what I mean? So yeah, but it's easier on this side of it to go, oh yeah, it was fine. It wasn't fine. I literally that night, Friday night, before they told us, by the way, they told us at 7 o'clock, they didn't even call us at 3 to go, come in, we're gonna, you know, 7 o'clock, Malcolm and I have to go on and do no intermission two-hander. I walked out of the theater. They told us, they go, as soon as they opened their mouth, I got up, walked out into Schubert Alley, called my second ex-wife going, I'm done, I'm fucking done. She goes, you have to do the show. You have to go in there. I'm getting on the train. I'm getting on the fucking A-train and coming home. No, you can't. I'm yelling in Schubert Alley. I'm like the crazy guy. What are you fucking talking about?
Outside of juniors.
Outside a picture of me and Malcolm, like, you know, right there. Like if it was Curb Your, if it felt like it was one of those shows, it'd be a close-up of me and behind me is like, You know. And she's like, you have to go do the show. People are here to see it. And it was surreal. Me and Malcolm just sitting there, Richard Maltby in the wings going, like it was surreal. Like you couldn't have fired us. You couldn't have told us at three. Right. So I could have at least be drunk for the performance.
And it's an emotional piece, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, that's the thing. It was what it was. It was a little chamber piece. I mean, I think Brian and Neil, the writers, they actually got a Drama Desk nomination. Like the piece was good. It just wasn't, maybe it shouldn't have been on Broadway, but certainly not for five shows. I know. And that's where I met Sondheim in Schubert Alley. Oh, not that.
I know. It all comes together, right?
He's like, what's going on? Right. Well, Mr. Sondheim, let me tell you. No,
you did a good Sondheim face there.
You did.
He came either the next night or the next night and told Brian and Neil that he liked it. And I was walking out of Schubert Alley and he goes, hey, nice job, young man. And I was like, I really was like, thank you, sir.
Yeah, yeah.
Going to Angus, you know, back when Angus was around.
When the show announced closing, social media obviously wasn't super, super huge at the time, but did everyone flock to that show? Like, were they full houses for the last few?
No, I mean, they were full anyway. I mean, it was in the first week. My dad came to all of them because he was in town. Well, that was the thing. Your opening night gift was also your closing. You didn't even clean out your opening night gifts. No, everybody came though. I mean, I have a note from Sheldon Harnick. I have a note. Everybody came.
Yeah.
Like people came, like composers came, people came. But no, it was well before social media really took over the universe. Yeah. So people wouldn't have even, and listen, people didn't really even know what that show was going to be anyway. I'm trying to think of an equivalent. Did you ever see Malcolm in Amore? No, of course you didn't see it. You were 12, but years before. I'm trying to think of something. What did Pippa do that was?
Amelie.
Like Amelie, but not even, I mean, Amelie, I think even ran, but it's like a chamber piece. It's a theater chamber piece about a person or two people and some lighting. Do you know what I mean? It's not, that's the piece. And we, in regards to the reviews or whatever, people didn't want that. But to your point, I think had social media been as prevalent, maybe people would have been, we're going to all of them.
You're part of history.
Oh, yeah. I'm part of history.
See, Broadway's crazy like that. And there was a TV series that captured the insanity of the behind the scenes of Broadway.
Nice. Well
and
done,
you were a part of it.
Well done. Do it again, though, so I don't cut you off and make fun of you.
No, it's fine. So we got to talk about Smash because as Connor and I had seen you in the closing company of Rent, we were absolutely gagged to see you as Michael Switch singing Bruno Mars on
Which
Smash.
Is really weird.
So weird.
Very weird.
What we need is a leading man with a legit voice. I'm a sabaco. Uh-huh. Like, what the fuck is happening? Good writing, guys.
They were like, he's at La Mama doing Bruno Mars.
And he's got like tattoos. It's exactly the opposite of what we want. But
you were DiMaggio. I have to say that on Lexington and 57th Street.
50.
One of those.
How dare you, sir?
You call yourself a Smash fan.
How dare you, sir? We're going to just let it go. On Lexington and 52nd Street.
Now that song is drama.
On Lex. That song is dramatical. I remember when.
Wait, can you sing it?
No, how's it go? I know how the tune. On Lexington and 52nd Street. How's the beginning go? It's really good. It's really bad.
Yeah, yeah.
None of us know.
I know all the ladies' songs. I know. I could tell you anything Megan Hilty sang in that.
What's funny is I sang before that, but I hadn't sung something really big before that in the show. And I remember this day, it's very odd. They used to do table reads at Smash. A lot of shows do table reads, a lot of shows don't, of the new episode, right? And we had recorded the songs. Obviously, when you're doing this, or like on Nashville, you recorded the song. You probably got the song 5 weeks in advance and saying, here's what we're going to do to the song. And that's what you have to shoot. That's kind of the way you work. It's very odd. And so I had already recorded it. And the teamster was here to pick me up. And we got caught in traffic for the table read. So I literally walked into the table read. And the room is full of every executive, cast member, everybody. And sometimes at the table reads, they play a snippet of the song just to go, here's the feel, right? I walk into on Lexington and a 50. I'm not joking. I walked in a room and Brian Darcy James goes, just mouths the words, fuck. Sorry, we're on a podcast. Fuck. He later told me, why don't I get to sing something like that? And I'm like, fuck off, Frank.
He didn't get a single song in that whole show.
Oh, poor Frank. Just because Deborah Messing doesn't, or sorry, what's her name?
Julia Houston.
In the show.
Julia Houston.
Julia doesn't love you anymore and likes Michael Smith. Yeah. how dare you, sir? But no, I remember walking in and people going, oh, okay. Like golf claps. Oh.
I remembered how the song opens. Christian now it's, hurry, hurry. That part, right?
Step right up. See the star who lit. Yeah.
That's it. See, I wasn't being shy earlier. I truly just couldn't remember.
I just got the chills. Oh my God. Well, I also love, you know, History Is Made at Night, Mr. and Mrs. Smith. You really got some good ones in there. Those songs
are great. I got some great ones. No, Mark Shaiman, again, is one of those people. I would never compare he and Ingrid in the same way, but I don't understand writers. I understand writers who go and write words and go, hey, we need this to be a little more juicy or whatever, and they go and do that. I don't understand musicians who craft the same way. A History Is Made at Night was Spielberg, one of Spielberg's favorite songs.
Okay.
And Shaiman, I remember he came to him with something. He's like, yeah, it's almost there. It's not right. And he had to literally go rewrite a song. Like, how do you just go rewrite a song that tells a plot, a character emotion? Because mm-hmm. Smash was all about, this is what it is on the face of it, but this is what's going on underneath. And Shaiman is one of those composers, along with Scott, who did the lyrics, yeah. As I burp into the mic. I'm that guy that can just run into a room and do that. I find that other world, like Lin-Manuel apparently is that person that can just craft something. What do you mean?
Yeah.
Where did the melody come from? Where did the lyrics come from? Well, how did you get those chords? I don't have the brain for that. Right. So I admire that.
Clearly you're enamored by it with Ingrid.
Just a tittle bit.
Did you like being on Smash? Was it fun to film, I guess I should say? Because
I loved it.
Yeah, you loved it.
We loved it. It was an odd show. It could have been, not to segue into Nashville, but it was the opposite, meaning it was very precious. And precious in good and bad ways. Smash was great because it was about our world, you know, and they were holding up our world. It got a little precious, though. Like, you never went around Video Village if you were an actor in Smash. You didn't hang out because it was, you felt NBC's presence. You felt the onus of getting this shot right, which is not conducive to filming anything ever. Just bring up Nashville, it was the opposite. Nashville is like, they've let them loose in the asylum and let's see what happens. But it was fun. You were allowed to mess around to a point and blah, blah, blah. But Smash was fun to shoot just because it was also like, you know, you look across a room, oh, Christian and I, there'd be a room where I'm supposed to be in a singing, being serious. And I can look over at Kristen and just some raised eyebrows and that's it. And then, you know, so much fun. I met Deborah on that and we were together for a while, which was great.
Right.
It was my first big show, but it was my first time someone going, yeah, we'll give you several episodes of a television show. Yeah. Not three, one or two, like you'll be a main player. I'm like, oh, okay. Oh, I like this. And I love filming. I love it, love it, love it, love it. But some of my, I have some very dear friends. One of my camera guy that I've worked with recently, I'm directing now. We can talk about that.
I'm curious.
But he was a Steadicam guy on that. Just taught me a lot about acting for the camera. You know, Teresa Reback was a showrunner. Yeah. Michael Mayer. I had some incredible directors, but some incredible you know, people, and it was the first time people hate watched something, which was fun. I mean, what a weird thing, but people were like, it really was the first time, like, well, they're not doing it right. You know what I mean? Oh, that's not like Broadway, but I love those tights. You know what I mean? Like,
and of course it had to be the theater community that would do that too, you know?
Right. But they watch every fucking
day. Oh, and still do. It is. I think it's more popular now than it was back then.
Is that the truth?
I think totally. So. If it would have been, you know, picked up by Netflix or something, I think it would have continued.
How great is it when Julia comes back to, at the very end, comes over to Michael's house, won the Tony. I'm like, yes, you know.
You've been waiting. Now, wait, I need to know, was that scene added after the show was canceled, or was the plan that they would go back?
Well, no, they knew the show was not getting picked up. Well, I think even well before even maybe the last three.
Yeah, it was moved to like Friday or Saturday night, like early on in the second season's run.
Which is the graveyard of television.
Yes.
Saturday night is the graveyard of television.
Yeah.
I know what we need. We need less. We need nobody over 40. Right. So me, Brian, Roz, we're all gone. All gone.
Yeah.
Because you don't need men over 40. And then let's, you know, I'm not going to get into that, but.
That's true. No, I know. The show certainly took a different turn.
And I prefer the first season, although it was, you know, it was fun to have different musicals in the second season. The first season for me is.
It'd be fun to watch it all now because I barely watched the second season. It'd be fun to watch it just to have a cohesive go.
Has Ingrid seen it?
Ingrid, I feel like she saw a lot of the first season.
Okay. What about your kids? Do they watch you? Do they see what you do?
They do. You know, I don't think they do now. I mean, I don't think have you seen Dopesick? Dopesick?
I have not seen it yet.
No. It's intense. And I tend to play a lot of assholes. I tend to play a lot of bad guys now.
I mean, you on Stranger Things.
Oh, I was voted like most evil character of whatever year that was.
I know that was, and then
what a horrible human. I mean, at least my Dopesick guy is a horrible human, real person. So if you're listening, he's not.
Okay.
Michael Freeman, if you're listening, you're a horrible human. No. Oh God, could I go to jail or anything?
No. We'll let it out.
Yes. By no, we mean yes. But those people are doing like the Billy's dad. Neil, as I like to call him, on Stranger Things. He's a horrible, horrible human.
Yeah.
Like a horrible human. And I loved every second of him. Because it was like, you know, it's kind of like those guys. Not that I grew up with these guys, but I've seen dads. I certainly grew up with these dads where I'm going, not my dad, but seeing guys going, sorry, what was it? Oh, you can't, you know.
Uh-huh.
As opposed to Ingrid Rett, so I went on tape for that in our bedroom with my, now I have cameras and lights and fancy lights. Back in the day, I taped my iPhone to our closet door and I had a stand right off camera with a pillow on it. And Ingrid just reads lines way off in the distance, but I act like I'm looking at her and I would hit the pillow as hitting Billy. I knew shooting it. I was like shooting the self tape. I was like, oh, I'm getting this.
Wow.
I don't always feel that way. I was like, oh, I'm going to get this because I'm not overplaying it. And then all of a sudden I'm like, I'm being like this and then smacking the guy, smacking the pillow. I wish I had a video of that.
Has there ever been anything that you're like, oh, there is no way I'm getting this. And then you miraculously got it.
A lot of times with HBO, you'll either self tape or they'll make you, or they'll say, we're interested. Okay, fine. You're interested. Let me know when you're really interested. Cause everybody's interested to a point. And then 3 months later, like The Deuce was like that. 3 months later, he's like, hey, you got The Deuce. I'm like, what's that?
Oh, yeah.
Remember the HBO? Yeah, the HBO thing. Yeah. But
were you a porn star on The Deuce? I never actually watched it yet.
How dare you, sir? No.
I know. Was Maggie Gyll a porn star?
She was a porn star, and I'm like a normal dude that goes on a few dates with her.
Oh, okay. Right. I'm going to watch it.
Sharp Objects is one of those where I went on tape at my agency. You knew it was a good tape. But again, you don't hear anything forever. And then all of a sudden it's like, oh, you're playing Bob Nash. And you're like, oh, this is great. Do you want the mustache or not? You know.
Pivotal role.
Very pivotal. Don't give anything away. Just kidding. But my kids, I don't know that they watch anything. You know, Nashville, when I was on Nashville, they would come visit. There are extras on an episode where I'm like in the lobby and they're like, people are like, Luke Wheeler. And my kids are both like, want an autograph. And I'm like, well, how you doing there? You know.
I got to say, we watched, that was like when we would come home on like winter break or spring break, we'd watch with our mom. And so she is tickled that you're on the podcast. Well, I've got to ask about Connie Britton. Is she everything?
She's everything. She's, I'm meticulous with learning lines, with knowing things within an inch of their life so I can be open on set, right?
Yes.
She is the same way, but she's been on a lot of TV shows. One of them was Friday Night Lights, where it was more like, we're going to put the camera here, docu-feel, but you know, and there are lines, but you just do your thing around it. And Connie was an EP, an executive producer on Nashville, and she had script approval and stuff like that. And it would be funny. So I learned to learn my lines, and then I learned to forget them because inevitably, and this is not disparaging her, but in the makeup trailer, literally moments before we're going to go fucking shoot it, hey, Will, and she'd bring up the script. Yeah, so I'm, and she'd start just cutting stuff. And it was never her stuff. I mean, it was always her stuff.
Oh, okay.
It's never my stuff. So she'd be like, so I'm like, okay. So that's a big monologue for me now. Oh, okay. Or, you know, or on set, if the line was, honey, I don't think Jeff Fordham's going to let us do this thing. You know, do you agree? And my line would be, yeah, I sure do. You know, whatever. She'd go, honey, Luke, I just don't know that Jeff Fordham's going to let us do this. What do you think? And then you'd be like, well, hon, you know, listen, I think that we got to do what's right for, and that would inevitably, one, be the take they'd use. It taught me to listen. It wasn't far-fetched, like we're improvising, like it's, mm-hmm. you know, but it was like, oh, I'm going to learn to listen and react. And it freed me up. We had a blast. When she walks on set, she'll break balls. She's awesome. She's stunning, but there's something about her that you cannot, like, there's a vulnerability, mm-hmm. even when she's strong, which I love when strong characters, there's a vulnerability when you go into that close up of them. And she's just, man, she's fucking, did you watch White Lotus?
Oh yeah.
I was just going to ask you if you did. I loved it.
I know.
How twisted and weird, yes. and great is that? Like, it's so weird. It took me a second to like it. And yeah. in fact, I didn't. And then I'm like, oh, stop, Will. You do. You do like right. this. You're just thinking you don't because nothing's happening so far.
Or maybe at all.
Yeah, but at all, but in a way that's shot beautifully. And you go, I know these people. And we've been to the Four Seasons there, so it's a really
amazing. Oh, yes, that's where it was shot, right?
But watching Connie even do that, trying to be a mom who just trying to make sure everybody's mm-hmm. okay. You're like, oh, she's fucking, and Steve, I could talk about that for an hour, but it's she's fucking yeah. great, right?
Oh yeah.
So good. I love.
You've worked with so many amazing women. I am just curious, if you were to, you know, be reunited with one of them, who would you want to work with again? We'll say in a musical.
Yeah, I was just going to say, it's in a musical.
Well, I mean, Kelly O'Hara and I could do, it's funny, Kelly's trajectory for the longest time, people thought, in fact, first time I worked with her was doing Oklahoma in Oklahoma.
Oh, fun.
At the Oklahoma Lyric Opera. And I always thought, oh, yeah, I didn't know her. Kelly O'Hara, you know, great voice, sings the canon, mm-hmm. but that's pretty much it. That's all I knew and heard. And then you're like in rehearsal, you're like, oh, you're funny. You're a ball buster. You're a funny human being. Then I got to do Bells Are Ringing. And then that's when everybody else went, oh, Kelly O'Hara, she's actually a comedian. Oh, she actually can sing like a god. And she's also a comedian. Oh, okay. So then when Kiss Me, Kate happened, no fucking, and we'd done a few things. Mm-hmm. No, what else? We did something else. Nice Work. I keep forgetting about Nice Work because I was in it for a hot second.
Right.
Okay.
But she's one of those people that I would run to do. And you're talking to someone that doesn't want to do any theater at all.
You're a little burnt out at this point, or
I don't mean I forever, but close. It's so tiring. It's so having nothing to do with you. You don't know what it's going to end up being, and even if it ends up being good, somebody might think it's bad. And I'm not going to mention any musicals that are out right now that just opened, but like mm-hmm. some of the reviews for that one were really come on, let's all, you want to talk about the piece, that's fine, I'm not mentioning names, you want to talk about the piece, that's fine, now you're doing a social agenda on the piece, go fuck.
I hear you
anyway. So I don't, beyond that though, it's just tiring. I mean, it's Kiss Me, Kate killed me.
You were throwing Kelly O'Hara over your shoulder and like, was your body broken?
Broken. My brain, body, everything broken. Like it was broken. It was, but fun. But again, not that much. I mean, to me, I'm being honest now, I used to soften it going, well, if it's the right piece, and let's say if it's the right piece and it doesn't have any music and it runs for 3 months, then I'll do it. That's a play that runs for 3 months. That's why I want to do it. But signing your life away for Ingrid's casting in a Notebook. And in my head, I'm right. like, they're going out of town to fucking Chicago. That's 3 months. They're going to sign Broadway mm-hmm. contracts, let's say in the fall or whatever, for a year. They're done. Those people can't do anything else until 2023. When you're young, go do that. No, but anyway.
Vanessa Hudgens is going to be locked up on the Notebook again for the next year and a half. But anyway, well.
I don't know about that. No, it's kidding.
What I was going to say was, I thought you were so great in Kiss Me, Kate. And it was, know, like awards, whatever. You should have been nominated for a Tony. What the hell was that?
You know, I usually would do the diplomatic. I don't, well, it's just I can't say an honor to be nominated because I wasn't.
It's so weird.
That was weird. It was weird. It's completely subjective. I can't bitch about myself if I bitch about when other people bitch about award shows and why wasn't so-and-so nominated, because the group of people that nominates people didn't think you were good enough. Yeah. Fine. That's fine. T- to me personally, it was a fucking, you know, it was a weird blow. I'd also talk about real life. I mean, I also, I joked earlier about getting fired from a pilot. I'd shot a pilot the previous September, and then it was one of those real life moments that people don't think we have. One of those real life moments where it was like Thursday in the paper deadline, Panic gets picked up going to 10 episodes starring Will Chase and so-and-so, right? By Saturday, I'm getting ready to go on for my evening show, and I get a text from a producer going, Will, thank you so much. It was really great. You know, we'll find something for you. This out of nowhere. Because usually what happens when something gets picked up, you get a letter of intent after that called a pickup letter going, we're going to pick up your option. You're ours for 7 years or whatever. This was a producer telling me that didn't realize my manager hadn't called me yet. So I'm like, and me and typical Will was like, oh, literally my manager, Anthony, calls moments later going from Paris going, sorry, sorry, I've been trying you. I said, yeah, I think I just got fired from Panic. He goes, yeah, dude, I'm so sorry. You know how this goes. I hang up the phone. It's 7:15. Fight call's about to happen. So then and I have no problem telling this story. Then I was like, oh God. And this is something that was beyond going to pay me a lot of money. I want to do TV. I wanted, it would be my first series regular in a few years. It was going to shoot in New York. Oh, it was a meaty role, but not the whole show. Like, it was a great thing. Then I went to, oh my God, I'm disappointed. Like, I went to my disappointed place and I was a fucking mess. So I grabbed Preston Boyd. He covered me and kissed me, Kate. I grabbed him. This is so unprofessional, but I grabbed him. So, can you do the show tonight? Great. Let's go to stage management. I went to stage management. I said, are there any of the guys out? And I'm weeping. And they said, what's going on? I said, I got let go from the pilot. And they all knew about the pilot. It was going to conflict with Kiss Me, Kate a little bit. Like, oh my God, Will, what do you mean? I said, I've been let go from the pilot.
Yeah.
And so I said, are there any other guys out? No. Are you guys cool if Preston does this show? I know this is very unprofessional. And Preston, are you sure? Absolutely. Absolutely. Fine. I went up, my dresser, David, God bless him, because he had to live with me for the next week. He's like, you're going to be okay. You know. I went out in the street, called a cab. Within 20 seconds, Scott Ellis calls me going, honey, it's going to make me cry right now. Honey, I'm so sorry. And he's in the TV world. He goes, I know this. This is the worst feeling in the world. I'm not going to give you any. You'll get another job. You know you will. This is the worst fucking feeling. Go home, have a scotch. I got here. Ingrid had a scotch. I was devastated. Yeah. I was like, it was horrible. And it was a real life, one of those real life disappointment. Yes, I'm starring on Broadway. Yes, I'm doing things that I love to do. This was something I wanted desperately and had been going on for like 6-7 months. And it was one of those moments where it was like, and you know what? The next, and there'd be every now and then on the couch that night, I'd be like, fuck.
Aww.
You know, like, yeah. Like, and then, you know, 2 days pass, you're like, all right. Cause we've all heard these stories. I've had friends that go, yeah, I got fired from a pilot. And you're like, oh, until you go through it,
sure.
Fired from a pilot. And Anthony keeps going, you weren't fired from, okay, I shot the pilot. They didn't want me for the series. What do you want me to call it? But it was one of those real life, you know, Preston came through the stage, man. If they had said, no, you got to do it, I would have been fine. I would have done the show.
Yeah.
You would never have known. I wouldn't have cried through the show. But this was a moment that, and Scott calling was like the perfect, like, little moment of, you're going to be fine.
Yeah.
This is sucks. This business fucking sucks sometimes, especially when you're on top of the world. So anyway, that was a long way around to the Tonys happening shortly thereafter.
Okay. Yeah.
Oh, shit. This is like a 1-2 punch.
I think it was one of those. Also that like, oh, this is when I get in trouble, but the fact that we didn't win choreography, come on.
I will.
Are you fucking,
I know,
too darn hot. Me? Anything Stephanie Styles did, like, truly, it was.
But anything Warren Carlyle, I mean, that choreography was otherworldly. And it, not to take anything away from.
Ain't Too Proud.
Ain't Too Proud. Yeah. Which is beautiful. But I was like, come on, this is innovative, amazing. And Corbin was amazing. And Stephanie was amazing.
Yeah.
And James was amazing. And anyway, so it was kind of like one of those, like, and they're like, do you want to come and introduce? I'm like, fuck no, I don't want to come. I really was bitter. I was a bitter queen. I
and
really
you're allowed
was bitter.
To be a bitter queen when it comes to that sort of thing.
I was bitter. I was a bitter. I was bitter. Like, no, okay, I don't want to come introduce my friends. And Kelly was like, gotcha. Totally gotcha. Been there. Gotcha. I'm like, been there. You got 14 million nominations and won it finally.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah, it was. It was a long road.
But those moments are real life, kind of real life for an actor, but real life kind of moments where you, mm-hmm. you know, you don't get want and desire and yearn for. And that's a real kind of, you know, learning for sure. Learning, but
yeah,
but no, that was a tiring, that was a very tiring experience.
Yeah.
All you young theater actors want to act. No, I'm kidding.
And from an outsider's perspective, you know, it's, we see you in all these different projects all the time. So we're like, oh, he's always working. He's always booked. I really appreciate your vulnerability in sharing that. Obviously, you mentioned you've got some new things in the pipeline. You're directing now.
So I've been trying to guest direct, trying to, meaning when I was in Nashville, I was going to possibly do one. Then the show got canceled.
And then picked up by another network.
And then picked up by another, but I wasn't on it. I've been wanting to guest direct for a long time. And enough people were like, well, you can, you should, right? Then when COVID happened, I thought, okay, there's a lot I know. A lot I don't know. There's nothing happening. Give yourself film school. I gave myself film school every day for about 3 months. I have two great mentors. One is Don Scardino, who wrote and directed Lennon. He's also a wonderful television director, producer. And then Eric Stoltz, who's another wonderful actor, great director. They're both kind of my mentors, and they literally gave me assignments. They gave me script breakdowns. They gave me watch this. Dom was like, I just directed New Amsterdam, an episode, watch it all, count all the setup, you know, like everything. And then without fail, everybody I talked to, DPs, producers, make a short film. And I thought, that sounds absolutely horrible. I don't want to make a short film. I don't write. I'm not that person, but I did. And I shot a short film in LA. We have a house in LA. We were there for most of COVID. Other than a few shots that Ingrid actually shot, a couple dolly shots, it's all me. Jack Davenport kind of does a voiceover. So I did that.
Of Smash fame.
Of Smash fame. He kind of does a little Will Shakespeare kind of thing. Dagger. It's called Dagger. It's on my Vimeo. And then I wrote a script, a movie for my kids that's out at film festivals right now. But so you can't see that. It's called Trunk Show. It's like a 14-minute short. My daughter Daisy and Gracie, and then Daisy's partner Bernard, who's a wonderful actor, wrote this really kind of intense, funny thing for them. So a couple of film festivals have selected that.
Congrats.
It's weird because there's not a ton for me to direct at the moment, so I have to create my own content. Ingrid just did the Today Show, so her company hired me to direct it, and so I directed, which you can see on my Vimeo. I directed her little thing that aired on Tuesday of her singing Winter Wonderland with her little group, and just shot a music video. I love that side of the camera. I would much rather, weirdly, I love acting. Here's what I've found out, and then we can just shut up, because I could go till probably 9 p.m.
No, you're good. We'll go to our closing segment in a second, but I'm curious about what you're going to say.
Well, I love work. I love acting. The theater part, the doing the theater part from 8 p.m. to 10:30, I love. Don't like all the other stuff, but I love. When I'm on set, I love acting. I don't like sitting in my trailer and them coming going, yeah, it's going to be a couple more hours because they had to pick up. I don't like that. I do like working every minute of the day. It's very odd. I know a lot of actors go, I fucking love sitting on my ass. Don't get me wrong. I love Something Rotten, where I came on for 2 seconds and then sat on my ass for 40. I love that. Yes. But no, I love working. I just did Dope Sick with Danny Strong, great creator. And he let me shadow him for a day on set because I wasn't, it's impossible to shadow anybody on sets these days with COVID and stuff. So I thought, I'm on the show, I might as well. And I loved it because you're as a director on television, you're constantly working. You're not never working. You're never, I'm just checking some emails. You're never, someone's going, right. Will, we have a red cup, but it's not from the 1800s. We need it. You know what I mean? And then when you're working, you're working. I love that. I love working. So that was going to be my point. I like the idea of, talk about collaborative when you're directing television. It's super collaborative, but your job at the end of the day is to make sure we don't shoot 16 hours, to make sure you can talk to the actors in a given way, to make sure what ends up being interesting on camera. And that's pretty much in television. That's pretty much it. Film is a little different world, but I love the idea of that. So that's where I'm kind of headed now. I'm still act. I like the acting. For anybody who wants to hire me as, no, I know it's going to happen. I know in a decade I'll look at this and go, oh my God, how many Law and Orders can I do? But but for now, that's kind of, as you can tell, I'm really psyched about it. I love the idea of it. I love the idea of creating, and I don't have that.
The last thing I'll say about you being a director, I think that you've had so many experiences too, that you'll be like an actor's director. You'd know the best way of going about it.
It's interesting learning all this stuff. And Eric and Don both went, Will, it's great that you know about lenses. It's great you know about digital cameras. It's great that you know about ISO and lighting. And you already know how to talk to actors. Mm-hmm. Actors already like you. I'm like, oh yeah, fuck, I forgot. The whole point, there's a DP who does DP. When you're making your own, that's the thing I learned. When you're making your own, you're doing everything. It made me appreciate literally everybody who does. I don't care what it is. I don't care if it's a grip putting up a fucking flag to block light. Now I know why that's important, what that means. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, oh yeah. Oh God, of course. So when I was directing the film for my kids, I was doing a lot, but I had a crew and I literally could direct. And I was like, oh, this is great. I can just literally go up to Daisy, go try, you know, blah, blah, blah. Remember you're doing this. And then they do it and you're like, man, I'm good. No, they do it and you're like, but they do it and you're like, oh, that's right. I didn't think of that. That was the other thing with my kids. Anyway, when I watch, that's what's collaborative. It's like when I watch Daisy or Gracie or Bernard do the thing and take it to a different thing, you're like, oh God, right. This is a living. Yes, I have an idea of what it's supposed to be like, but you know, it's also taught me to be a little bit less rigid, mm-hmm. little flow, which is what I like when I'm on set. Like, I'm like, oh yeah, remember what you're like, asshole Will on set? No, but remember what you like to hear and what you don't like to hear. Remember a little verb or something like that. So it's just little moments like that. So I think I can be pretty decent at it and at least have fun. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
At the end of the day, it's fucking make believe.
I yeah. love it. And I'm, you seem so energized and excited about it. And not to drop your age, but it's just amazing that at 51, you can still be this excited about working and something a little bit different, you know?
I think so. And Ingrid and I talk about it all the time because she, you know, is obsessed with age and, you know, has lost both parents and everybody's going to die. Not disparaging Ingrid, but, you know, that's where she lives. And I keep going, you're 42, she just turned 42. You're 42. You're about to embark on, like, she's composed music for a children's show that's going to come out soon. Pretty high end. And a couple of movies are pursuing her. I'm like, you are embarking on something. Even though you know you're a composer, now you're going to be a composer. Mm-hmm. And it's not like you're just writing, somebody's orchestrated your pop songs. That's just not Ingrid. She's writing music for a musical and she's going to, and I keep going, so by the time you're 50, by the time I'm 60, because I'm 9 years older, I said, I will have directed a shitload in a decade. That's a long fucking time. And I'm only 60. I keep going, only 60. I have to keep saying that. But same with her. By the time she's 50, she will have, it'll be fun to look back and go, oh my God, did you know, remember when we were just trying to, it's funny yeah. to still, you know, being this successful or whatever, still trying to, but I am, like you said, I am passionate about it. I'm trying to get in that door and see where that leads me. You know
That's
what I mean?
Awesome. I admire it
yeah,
so much.
I think
much.
It is. Oh, thanks. Yeah. Yeah. I like hearing it from someone else saying, because it's like, oh yeah, I am. I'm stoked. It's weird too to not be 25 going, oh, I want to direct or I want to act, because you don't know that you have yet. You don't know that you're actually any good or have a point of view. I do. It's just now I need someone to call and go, hey, do you want to do NCIS season 8, episode 14? Fuck yeah, I do. You know, got a car crash? Yeah. Like, yeah. I do. I know I can. Yeah. Will I be a nervous fucking wreck? Absolutely, but I won't act like
yeah.
it.
And the money, I hear the money's worth it for directing network TV dramas. Like, I hear crazy things about these numbers, Will, but.
Well, I don't want to speak out of school. No, I mean, the money is amazing, but I just want to, for me, doing like an episode, and I joke about NCIS season 8, episode 14, but I need that. I need the one where it's a machine.
Yeah.
They need, and I'm not trying to change the world with my directing and my vision for cinematography. I love it. I love moving images, but I'm not coming in and change. They do a thing. I'll come in. I can do the thing. I'll talk to the actors. Casey Nicholaw came in and directed an episode of Smash. It was delightful. He didn't know a lens from a, and I'm not disparaging Casey, but he'd be the first to tell you. We had dinner. He's like, I don't know a 20 millimeter from a, but he knew how to talk to the actors. He'd look at the DP and go, you guys good? You guys good? Great. Let's move on. We were doing like 8 hour days. People were like, this is the best director ever. Like 8 hour days on Smash, you know.
What episode was it?
I feel like I was in a diner when he was shadowing. I feel like I was shooting a diner scene when he was shadowing. So he was ever, whatever the, this would be a nice trivia. I was in a diner with Deborah, probably, and he was shadowing. So then he did the next episode.
I wonder when you guys were in a diner, probably work going over the script. Cause I feel like she was always like, her character was always having to like go over.
With Michael Swift, she was always having meals with Michael Swift.
That was drama. That was drama. Listen, I'm a huge
a lot of drama.
I'm a huge Michael and Julia. I always like them together.
Deborah's fucking amazing. She's like just like she's everything you think she is. She's like just the coolest person. She and
Angelica Houston.
Fucking Angelica Houston. You'd never know they were Deborah Messing and Angelica Houston ever. They just came in, they got their makeup done, they did the thing. It was a fucking amazing. And the things Angelica used to do and say, just little snippets of things, just, you got this, or it's really fucking beautiful, Will. Or just whatever, you're like, oh, okay, I'm good. I don't ever need to do anything ever again. But Deborah was great. She's just like, she's a light in the room. She's a light on set. She's like, Angelica's the same way, just like a giving, awesome human. So then that feeds down, you know. I've been on the opposite sets where it's like, oh god, you know, number one or number two, number three is an asshole. Yeah. This is gonna be miserable, like for a season or whatever.
Yeah.
And then with that, it's like, oh, it just trickles down. Everybody knows they have to do good work, but you can have some fun. It's not that serious. It's serious, but it's not that serious. Do you know what I mean? You could always look over at Angelica or Deborah and it'd be like, oh god, NBC's in the room, and they're just like, fucking calm down, do your work that you got hired to do,
right?
Because you got hired, you're brilliant. You wouldn't be here if you weren't. Do your thing, let them worry about the editing or the line or the lights wrong or the whatever. You can't do any of that. And it's like, oh yeah,
I love to hear that.
Yeah, awesome. You speak so fondly about your exes. Well, it's wonderful.
You really do.
Well, my daughter's mother is amazing. Lori's amazing. I mean, we've known each other for God, 20 some odd years, and Deborah and I are great. And people ask me, you're going to get your tattoos covered up? Fuck no, they look badass.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, why would you?
I mean, Kentucky, I might want to because Mitch McConnell's an asshole.
Yeah,
You know, but I mean, I'm not covering these. I love them. I look at them, I go, they remind me of a part of my life. I'm not.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Love it. Oh my God. Well, listen, I feel like I could talk to you forever, Will, but we have to say goodbye. But before we do, we like to end on a dose of drama, a little something that's been on our mind, something you want to rant about, rave about, share, promote. It could be truly anything. And I have to say, before we kiss 2021 goodbye, I have not said this on the podcast yet, but Lady Gaga in House of Gucci, actress and star, everyone. She really delivers all of it. She really does. She's committed. She's compelling. She nailed it.
I have not seen it.
It's worth it for her.
It's an uneven film, but she's great. She's really great, Will.
Dylan, I'm putting it, Dylan. It's worth it for her.
Yeah.
talk about a trippy moment. We saw House of Gucci and we're walking out of the theater, like looking at our phones, and we find out Stephen Sondheim has passed away.
And Adam Driver's there? Oh.
I know. It was like the most...
Yeah, those are like surreal, weird, like you'll always remember that. Yep. You can't ever put it into words. You really won't. You'll never forget that, being probably elated with the movie or a moment in the movie or Lady Gaga or whatever, and then this. And it's like, what are you talking about? Those things, even now, they don't compute. That doesn't
compute. I like grabbed Connor and my boyfriend and I said, I need to tell you guys something.
I was shook. Well, it's funny because I was like thinking about the movie as I was leaving, and then I stopped thinking about it because all I was thinking about was Sondheim the rest of the night. And then people were asking me,
have you thought about the movie since?
Well, not until people asked me about it. And I was like, I haven't given it as much thought as everyone else has. But anyway, Lady Gaga, she's amazing. She's amazing. She's a movie star.
Yeah. All right. My dose of drama really quick is, we haven't heard an Ingrid Michaelson song on Grey's Anatomy in a while. And I know that she had a lot of tunes on there back in the day.
I think even too, she's in the book. Didn't they do a book or something? Didn't they do like a, you know, a retrospective? I feel like she's mentioned in the thing or something.
They did. Okay. Someone released like an unofficial history of Grey's Anatomy. Maybe a producer from the show or a writer show came out with a
big
thing.
That sounds very familiar. That sounds very familiar. And didn't Chris Carmack on the show cover Ingrid's song? I feel like he covered his character on the show. Yeah. I don't watch the show. His character on the show doesn't play an instrument.
He does play guitar every now and then.
I mean, they of course have to give him a guitar for a few seconds.
I feel like he, maybe his real life wife, did a cover of something Ingrid had already.
Oh, okay.
There's something like that, which was really weird because Chris is a friend and it's like the Nashville connection and he's covering Ingrid's song. And then, Ingrid and Grey's Anatomy are, you know.
They're tied.
They're tied forever.
I feel like our listeners are screaming into the world as they're listening to us talk about this. They're like, no, it was this song. Yeah. Chris did this song.
Of course they are. Thanks, guys. Yeah. we don't know.
Could have used you right now. Anyway, I love Ingrid. Oh my God. This is ultimately a podcast about Ingrid Michaelson.
Sure. You could whittle it down to all Ingrid all the time. You should have her on.
We should make it happen.
We should.
She goes to out of town in Chicago, you know, like I think they rehearse February, March and open in April or something like that. So you should get her on right before.
Catch her either before or when she's got a break. Cause I can only imagine the rewriting she'll be doing.
To her is like I've written it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
She's ready. Fuck off. She's ready.
Do this. I've been writing this fucking thing for 4 years.
Okay. Will, do you have a dose of drama? Anything you want to promote, talk about, rant about, rave about?
I want world peace. No. I like such as. You imagine if I did that monologue. Now, how badass would it be if I had done what's her name? Like such as in the U.S. Americans. Yeah. If I had done that, that would have been dope. Damn it.
Was Miss South Carolina? Was that what it was?
It was, yeah. And she, God bless her, right now she's like, oh, I wasn't thinking, really. I was going to rant a little bit about making art. We've done a good job at, I hate the word overcorrecting. I can't stand the word overcorrecting because to me, there's no such thing. Mm-hmm. It's either correct. I'm not a right or wrong person, but some things are right or wrong, right? And with art, I want us all to use this spotlight we have on us now, especially with everything that's happening socially, to really use it responsibly and to make good art, not to make anodyne art, not to just include everybody to include everybody, include everybody until that's, include people and tell those stories. Mm-hmm. If that's what you're going to do, don't just include people to make it look right or feel right or whatever. And again, things are hard. So art should be on some level easy, meaning we should really try to be inclusive. Mm-hmm. And I mean, really be inclusive in your heart and be open. Not I'm inclusive, but you got to listen to what I have to say and do it this way because it's too important right now. I mean, art is so, are you kidding? The thing people do to escape whatever it is they're crazy or they're good or they're whatever is what's on television, is what's on stage, is what is music. Yeah. And I'm not saying it all has to be hunky-dory and pretty, but it should reflect something and mean something. So I don't even know if that means anything other than I don't want it to be, I want it to have a point of view and a reason. I don't want it to be, oh, okay, this may as well be 20 years ago. It just looks a little different. No. Tell the story, make it look like it looks, and tell that story. And that story is rich.
Yeah.
You know, it's what Sondheim, again, I'll end with Sondheim maybe. He fucking, I don't think we'll ever look back and go, oh it's dated. He fucking, he made a guy kill people and make meat pies. He tells a story about a middle-aged guy who all their friends are married, and or now it's a middle-aged woman and all her friends are married. He took the Japanese imperialist. I mean, things, are you fucking out of your mind? Who's going to write a fucking musical about this? Mm-hmm. And he does. So to me, it's a great, take this piece and really make it something. Don't just whitewash it or just make it blasé. Really do something and tell something. I think it's
absolutely
perfect. So well said.
Perfect.
I don't know where that came from.
You're very centered all of a sudden. I loved that.
I don't know what happened.
No, that was beautiful. I agree.
The booze.
Well, it has been a damn delight to have you on this podcast. Oh,
thank
my God.
You guys are great. My pleasure. And any and seriously, any time that when life is normal and you're not doing this and you're all well in the same place and can have a meal or a drink or or if you just want to do this, we can do podcasts. Will's back for this is his sixth episode. We get it, Will. You're trying to fucking
hey, no, anytime. This is this has been amazing. No.
We get it. Yeah, okay. You don't want to do Broadway.
I would love that.
No one's asking you to do Broadway, Will. Okay. But seriously, let's I would love to sometime grab a drink or whatever. You guys are awesome. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Aw, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you. That means a lot. Hope you have a great holiday season with your Christmas elf.
My pleasure, guys. Pleasure to
thank
meet you.
Thank you, Will. It. We'll talk
happy,
to you soon.
Happy holidays. We'll be in touch.
Okay. And let me know when this airs. Okay.
Totally.
We will.
And everybody should follow us. I'm at Connor McDowell. He's at Dylan McDowell. We cannot thank you enough for everything you've done for us in 2021. I feel like we're ending it on such a great note, and I'm so excited. Literally, I just got the chills, actually, Dylan, because great things are coming for us next year.
They are. And I this was the best time, so we have nothing but gratitude for Will. But to all of our guests who came on board in 2021, and I am gagged to say we already have some amazing guests that we've recorded with and lined up for 2022. So the best, as they say, is yet to come. And Connor, I'll see you next time.
Next year.
Next year.
Drama.